Investigative journalist David K. Johnston says it's time for consumers to read the fine print. His new book, The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind, is about how many corporations have worked the regulatory system to their advantage and how that affects things ranging from the service you receive to the state of our infrastructure. He also examines the fees that banks and phone companies have added over the years that have made your bills incrementally larger, but have added up to big money for corporations. Johnston was a reporter for the New York Times for 13 years, where he covered the tax system. In 2001, he won a Pulitzer for his coverage of tax inequities and loopholes. He's now the board president of Investigative Reporters and Editors Incorporated and teaches at Syracuse University College of Law. David K. Johnston, it's a great pleasure to have you with us on the program. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me on, Joe.
It is a delight to have you here. This book is one of those things that just scares you, and you sort of know it's happening, but you don't want to know necessarily how the sausage is made, but then once you find out, I guess you're glad that you do.
Well, yes, you know, you're one of the few hosts who actually reads the books you have on your show, and I appreciate that because this book, like the two I did before in this series, is full of stuff that you have not read anywhere else because the news media is just not covering this stuff. And if you don't know about it, you're going to have your pocket picked, you're going to have your life put in danger, you're going to discover you don't have any rights when something goes wrong because corporations have been busy working the legislature in Albany and the other states and the regulatory agencies all across the country to undo ancient principles of business and get the system rewritten for their benefit.
You get the sense in the book that it's sort of a floodgate system where when one company gets to do something, then the other company says, oh, then we can do that, and then the dominoes just start to fall.
Yes, and in a number of cases, we have industries now that are essentially monopolies, duopolies, or oligopolies, and I show how they earn the highest profit by avoiding competition. Railroads is a good example. In the East Coast, we have a railroad duopoly, two railroads, a CSX and Norfolk Southern, that dominate. There are some other railroads, but they really dominate the markets. And so long as they don't poach customers from each other in any large fashion, they can jack up prices. And they have this fantastic rule they got adopted by the federal government called the bottleneck rule. If you have two supposedly competing railroads that run side by side for hundreds of miles, and then the last mile only one railroad serves a customer, that customer doesn't pay a competitive rate for the whole distance except the last mile and then a monopoly rate for the last mile. They pay a monopoly rate the whole distance. And that, I'll tell you how unbelievably costly it is. People in Lafayette, Louisiana, but for that rule, could have their property taxes reduced 10%.
Wow, 10%.
Just that one rule. And in New York, we are just full of things like this all throughout the Northeast that explain why our local economies are doing so poorly and why American multinational companies are sitting on $6 trillion of cash, most of it untaxed profits that they have taken out of the United States as expenses and deposited in tax shelters overseas.
It seems to me, when you are talking about phone companies, when you are talking about especially banks, that although in general, it seems that these fees prey most on the people who can least afford to pay those fees.
Absolutely. We've created a system in the U.S. In the lending area where we've replaced the loan shark with the local bank. And actually, it's not so much the local banks. It's Wall Street and the too big to fail banks that are charging these fees. If you take out the overdraft and related fees charged by banks in the U.S., all their profits disappear. But it's not the community banks that are doing that. The community banks that, you know, loan you money to buy a car out of their own deposits. It's the too big to fail banks that are doing this. And I show how in one case, the markup for a bounce check, which is now done digitally by software.
Yeah.
Somebody gives you a check to deposit and their check is bad. The rate of return on that is around 470,000%.
That's amazing. Now, the thing that I find incredible about this is that when you go into the bank and you're setting up a checking account or a savings account or whatever, they will very nicely say to you, oh, and we have this, you know, sometimes if some things haven't all cleared, you can certainly, that the charge will go through and you will have this protection.
Yes.
But in that, going in, it's a protection. Coming out, it's a fee and it's a penalty.
Absolutely. One of the things, you go buy a cup of coffee for $3.99 at Starbucks, pay for it with your debit card, and it turns out there's $3.98 in your account. They'll get you your cup of coffee, but for that one penny overcharge, they will charge you as much as $47 in fees, plus interest on the money they loaned you. And many of the banks have it set up in such a way that you have to pay the interest for at least 4 days. Even if you go to the bank that afternoon and say, hey, here's the money, they'll collect 4 days of interest from you. One of the banks here in New York, M&T Bank, has a deal where you can move money electronically from your savings account or your home equity line to your checking account at no cost. But if you move it from your overdraft account, there's a $10 charge, even if you do it yourself.
One of the things that I find fascinating, and you talk a lot about banks in the book, and it's just, you mentioned community banks, but one of the issues, at least I see, is that I've become incredibly frustrated with my bank and have said, okay, well, I want to move banks, and you go to a community bank, and then within 3 months they've been sold to somebody else. You know, and how do you get away from it?
Well, this is a real problem, and you know, the banks have come up with this genius idea of getting you to do the labor to put on their proprietary website your bills. You can pay them electronically.
Absolutely.
If you want to switch to another bank, you got to re-key punch all of that data, although there are some people out there working on software, and maybe it's already in the market by now, to help you move to another bank, but you'll get pretty much the same level of service. This goes to a fundamental problem that we have created in the United States, and that is businesses are trying to avoid the rigors of market competition. That is the invisible hand that Adam Smith wrote about in 1776. And by getting little regulations and rules adopted here and there, by changing statutes at the state and the federal level, what banks in particular, but many industries are doing, is escaping the rigors of market competition, which means they can raise prices artificially, provide you with poor quality service, leave you with no redress, force you into an arbitration, and if your bank happens to technically be headquartered, even if it says Albany Hometown Bank in, say, Pierre, South Dakota, they can say, oh, by the way, you want to have an arbitration with us over this issue, you got to go to Pierre, South Dakota. They are seeing to it that they have the upper hand and the customer has little or no redress. They are undoing business principles that date back thousands of years.
I'm going to tell a story, and I'm only telling the story because I'm interested in your view, because one of the things, and I kept on thinking about this while reading the book, which is sometimes you simply don't know who to blame. You don't know where to go, and you don't know who to blame, and you don't know who to believe. I had a very recent case. I was on vacation, and I rented a car. I went in, I go into the Hertz counter, and I rent the car. And I put it on my credit card. But I don't want to put it on my credit card because then when I drop off the car, I want to give them a debit card so it immediately comes out of my account so I have actually paid for it. All right?
Right.
And they tell you, well, that's all very easy. That's fine. So I drop off the car. It's 4 a.m. It's in Los Angeles. And I give them my debit card. They run it through and they say it's declined. I said, it can't be declined. There's money in there. They run it through again. Declined. Run it through a third time, declined. Run it through a fourth time. Now my wife's card, declined. Okay. So they've run it through 4 times, which adds up to $1,200 that the bank now has.
The bank has tied up $1,200 of your money.
Frozen the money on my account. Okay. Now, on my account, it says that the Hertz Corporation has $1,200 frozen, and TD Bank is holding it. Now, the question is then, if you call the bank, they say it's Hertz. If you call Hertz, they say it's TD. And meanwhile, you're out your $1,200. Now, the only thing I heard that made sense in the entire 2.5 weeks, David, that I was screaming about this, trying to get my money back, my money, by the way, was that the reason I was the one thing that made sense to me was the guy at Hertz said to me, I understand your concern, but you have to ask yourself, how would we benefit from that? Only the bank would benefit from that. Is that true?
Well, in that case, it's true in the sense that it's the bank that's tied up your money so that you can't get access to it. On the other hand, if you think about this, Hertz, by telling you that they'll do it a certain way and then not really pulling that off and putting the hold on your money, has effectively guaranteed its position. The short answer to your problem, Joe, is just leave it on the credit card and write a check or pay it electronically as soon as the charge
appears.
Absolutely, yeah. But you've gone to the core of one of these problems. And, you know, in the fine print, I don't just describe these problems and tell you about people who've had all these horrible things happen to them. I also show how we can solve a lot of these problems and what to do about them and show a couple of examples of where people fought and won and are better off as a result. At core, we need to understand what corporations are, what they are not. We are treating corporations now as these gods that we must pay tribute to and literally give our tax dollars to, instead of understanding that they are an efficient means to reduce liability for investors and encourage wealth creation, and we need to limit their activities so that we don't get the bad aspects of this. And I explain this with analogy in plain English to people so they'll understand the historic development of corporations. And by the way, at the founding of this country, there were only 20 corporations. There are now 6 million, and those 20 corporations were very, very tightly controlled.
Mm. It's hard to read your book and not be outraged. It's also hard to read your book and not realize how you yourself have been screwed in this. And I guess the question is, as you just alluded to, there are things that you can do. But I do have to ask the question of how complicit we are in this. I mean, how much is our malaise allowing this to happen?
Oh, America is founded on the notion set forth in the 6 noble principles in the preamble to our Constitution that we can solve any problem we have. We enshrined slavery, a word that doesn't appear in our Constitution, 9 different ways in the Constitution. We got rid of slavery. Women got the right to vote. We got child labor laws, despite all the ministers who said, it is God's plan that children work in these factories, and if you oppose this, you are an agent of the devil. We got environmental laws. We can solve this problem, but people have to pay less attention to who the Kardashian women are kissing this week and who is on Dancing on the Stars. They need to support organizations that are fighting for their interests. And let me give you a real good example right here in New York. We have, everybody gets this time of year, these notices, buy your electricity from us. It'll be delivered by your local utility, but buy it from us and you'll save money.
Right.
You know, the state does not give you any pricing information so that you can compare prices. And I've never heard of a market where you can't look at prices. The Retail Supply Association, that's the group that represents all these marketing firms, they actually did a filing with the state saying, don't make these prices public. This is confidential and proprietary information. Well, the state has now made them public in one very narrow, limited area for one company, and what that shows is it's all a scam. It's a bait-and-switch scam. I haven't seen a single article appear in a single newspaper in the state of New York about this, and to set up things and call them markets does not make them markets. Markets have rules, whether it's labor markets, automobile rental markets, or anything else. And we need to know what's happening. That's why I wrote the fine print, to explain it to you in an easy-to-understand way. And then we need to support organizations and speak to politicians about this. And in California, 3 people simply asked to speak to that state public utility commission about a plan to impose a tax on customers that the company would not have to give to the government. And their mere act of asking to speak caused the plan to be dropped.
And
so we can change things.
I agree with you, although it seems to me as though it's harder and harder and harder to talk. There used to be a time where you could talk to the bank manager, and you can't do that anymore.
Absolutely, and that's because as we insulate companies from competition. And in fact, Wall Street now has a system for grading how much companies can avoid competition. It's called moats. This will get worse and worse and worse. We need to get active and get a handle on this. And so I hope that people who are listening to this will read the fine print. It'll make you angry. I'm not going to beat around the bush about it.
You get steaming mad. Yes.
But it will empower you to understand how your children's lives are being put in danger by one industry because it's profitable to do so, and we've already had a lot of people die needlessly because of this. How your tax dollars being withheld from your paycheck may not be going to the government, but may legally being kept by your employer as a subsidy to the employer without you ever being told. You know, how our internet, which we invented and started out as number one, is now 29th in the world. We pay 38 times what the Japanese pay per bit of information. And if you buy a triple play package for your cable, phone, and internet, you're paying four times what people pay in France for vastly better services because of the policies that companies are getting put in place. The shrinkage back of the regulatory agencies that were supposed to look out for the consumer, the shrinkage of the consumer groups, and the news media paying less and less attention to this as its staff shrink.
Well, and also, if there is only one company, if I live in a rural part of the state of New York, and there is only one company to provide me cable service, or if there is only one company that is going to provide me with internet, high-speed internet, and there is only one company that is going to and maybe it's the same company that has the media
cell phone and right
and the media entity that would that ultimately covered this story, then you're kind of out of luck, aren't you?
Yes, and Joe, five states have already passed laws repealing the legal right every American has had since 1913 to a telephone at any address. You have to pay for the phone, but if you say I want a phone, they have to give it to you. The way these laws are being quietly rewritten by AT&T and Verizon at their request, you could have cable service running down your street, and they can say, we're not going to serve you. And the proof of that is in the book. I tell about how the chief regulator for consumers in the state of New Jersey cannot get internet service. If she can't get Fios internet service from Verizon, even after I wrote about it, and then what hope do you and I have unless we go back and get these rules changed? We need to understand that there is no such thing as deregulation. There is only new regulation. And the new regulations are being written by the companies for the companies. They take away your rights. They raise prices. They damage the overall economy. And they are forcing you increasingly to pay taxes that never go to government, but instead are given to these big companies.
I know we have to go and we're out of time, but I could talk to you about this stuff for another 3 hours. But it's fascinating to me of how, because even those of us, and by that I mean me, we'll look at this and say, I have a limited knowledge of what is going on, but I certainly understand what a monopoly is, and I don't understand how that's not a monopoly.
Well, it is a monopoly, and the way to deal with a monopoly, if you have a natural one, is proper regulation to act in place of the market. But what we've ended up is we've taken away the regulatory mechanism, and so now we have this worst of all possible worlds. In telecommunications, we have a duopoly that's turning into a cartel, as Verizon cross markets with Comcast, for example, with no effective regulation on behalf of consumers. And the rest of the world is going to run right by our economy. We're going to be worse off if we don't get with this. And so I wrote this so you don't have to read the fine print and everything. You can understand the principles of what's going on here. Connect with groups that do things. Complain to your lawmakers, many of whom don't have a clue to the laws that they've passed because they don't read the legislation that they vote on. And begin to get us back to having a market economy that takes advantage of all the advantages we have in the U.S., the entrepreneurial spirit that we are slowly crushing through these policies by making it impossible to compete against many of these big companies.
One of the most incredible pages in the entire book is simply adding it all up, where you just look at all of the things that you've talked about and put it into the average annual income of the family of four, and it's a lot of money. And it's
about 4 to 5% of the average family income. And remember, historically, Americans only saved 8%. So combine that with the higher payroll taxes that we paid until the last 2 years, and you can explain why Americans overall are not saving anymore, or have been saving very minimally for a number of years now. And those are very conservative numbers, and I only touched on some of the issues that are in the book in that list.
It's incredible. It's called The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. It is published by Penguin. And David K. Johnston, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your investigation, your work, and most of all, being on our program this morning.
Thank you, Joe.